Okay, so we'll be speaking for a few minutes about the beginning of the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Am I hearing this? So, Om Ganat Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we're going to give you a brief overview of this chapter. This chapter is called The Most Confidential Knowledge, which is interesting. Does anyone have an idea why it's called The Most Confidential Knowledge? We're going to be a little interactive here. What?
The depth of the relationship with the Supreme Personality.
Yeah, because it's about Krishna's nature. Previously, in the Gita, you have descriptions about the soul, and God is transcendental, but the real essence of it is, what is God's nature, and what or how does God interact with the material world, and how does God interact with his devotees? And it's very confidential. The reason we say confidential, or as in the chapter says, secret of all secrets, most secret of all secrets, is that it's only revealed by Krishna to one who is not envious of him. And the only way it can be revealed is not by reading a book, although the knowledge is here, but by Krishna in the heart revealing it. In the 15th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, Sarvasya chaham ridhi sanavishto mata smritir yanam apoenam cha. Does anyone know that verse? Yeah, you know that verse. Krishna says, I am in the heart. If people talk about God in the heart, God's in everyone's heart. That's true. But what he's doing, he's not using the cell phone. You can turn it off. Oh. I guess I can't find fault in a jacket. So what God is doing is he's reciprocating with you. Yayatamam prapajante tam sataiva bhajamiham. According to what you want, God is giving you intelligence, remembrance, and forgetfulness according to your desire. So, if you don't like God, God's not going to let you understand anything about him. You're going to become a nice atheist. I know that's an oxymoron. But you'll become a pukka atheist. Because God will feed you that intelligence, remembrance, and forgetfulness of him. So that you become an atheist. So everything's based upon your desire. He's reciprocating with you. This is something like The Secret. Anyone seen that movie?
Yes.
The Secret. Ooh. It's not exactly true that whatever you want, you'll get. Hold on a second. Because there's another factor called karma. So, yes, you can desire something. And if you have good karma, you'll get it. Let's say I'm desiring, what would I desire? A new computer. So let's say I'm desiring what type of computer? An Apple. Forget it. that's just for style. So let's say I'm desiring like top of the line Lenovo. So, and I desire it, but I have to have the money to buy it. So then I'm just stuck with an Asus because they didn't have money. That's another computer company. Because I didn't have money to buy the top of the line Lenovo, which was like $2,000, $3,000 for a laptop. So instead, $300 laptop is what I can afford. So your desire is there, which is important, but God gives you the fruits of your desire according to your karma. Okay, let's be practical. Let's talk about a practical instance. Let's say I have a desire to, let's say someone has a desire to be romantic. They've seen a lot of Bollywood films. And they want to be romantic. They're extremely romantic, but they have bad karma. So then as a result, yes, the secret is true. Then they find themselves in a pigeon body. And a pigeon can be extremely romantic many times a day. Typical example. You've heard of this example before. So that's fulfilling the desire. Your desire, yes, your desire gets fulfilled, but not exactly in the way you wanted it to be fulfilled. That's the difference. So Krishna's there. He's giving you facility. He's the strength of the strong. Also in the Gita, he says what? I'm the strength of the strong, the intelligence of the what? Intelligent. This is all Krishna. So Krishna's giving that in such a way, according to your desire and according to the deserve. There's two things, deserve and desire. That's what determines whether what you type of car you buy, what type of computer you buy, what vacation you go on, your desire and your money. Right? Deserve is the money, desire is the desire. That's a very simple example. So, if you want to understand God, but you're envious of Him, you're not going to understand Him. You could read Bhagavad Gita backwards and forwards for 10,000 years. There's so many Bhagavad Gitas that came to the West. I remember before I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement in 1971, I read the Bhagavad Gita in about 69. Actually, I read another Bhagavad Gita in 65. And I kept reading it and I didn't understand a word. It was the Penguin edition. That was a publishing company at that particular time. I'm sure you read that same edition. I think it was Christopher Isherwood or somebody who translated it. A small edition. Didn't understand it. And basically, until I began to execute devotional service, that means serving Krishna, following the rules and regulations, like no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meeting, and serving Prabhupada. Then realization came, because there's two things, jnana and vijnana. So here in this chapter, we're talking about vijnana. That means really understanding something perfectly. And that has to come from Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, Krishna says in the first verse here to Arjuna that I'm giving you this knowledge because you're not envious of me. Idam tu te guyatamam pabaksham anasuyave janaviganamas sahitam yajgatva mokshase shuva. Because you're not envious of me, I'm giving you this knowledge. So let's go ahead. I could speak about this forever. This is the general outline of the chapter, chapter 9. We put this together for the Bhakti Viksha course. Actually, if you study my PowerPoint, you'll understand the Bhagavad Gita. You don't have to go to a course in Mayapur. So, the chapter is divided into different sections. This is the verse numbers on the left-hand side. The first 1 to 3 verses are dealing with being non-envious of Krishna, how you're qualified or disqualified to understand Krishna. And then we get into something much more confidential, which is Krishna's relationship with this world. In other words, it's a question that many religions have tangled with. Where is God? Is God part of this world, or is he simply transcendental? Is he what we call the prime mover? The prime mover, of course, comes from Aristotle, where God starts the game off and then he just either goes to sleep or loses control. That's called the prime mover philosophy. In other words, let's say the football, let's say baseball. Let's say the president of the United States throws the first ball out of the game of the season, right? Anyone seen that? No. You've never seen baseball? Your whole life is useless. The president of the United States throws the first ball out, but he's not responsible for what happens after that, right? You can't blame him because the Mets lost that season. Is that the name of the team? I think so. You can't blame him. Some people misunderstand God as being like that. You know, he just starts, he's a good guy, but you know, he's not gonna mess with us. That means he's transcendental, completely transcendental. And some people misunderstand as God as being part of this world. Well, he's just one of us. You know, just happened to be God, he did enough austerities and came to the point. Just like you find people in India who have constructed many temples to people who became God, so to speak. I wish you could show me the process. And, you know, and even there was, during the 1960s, there was one God, and God fell down, and his mother claimed her other son was God instead of him. So Prabhupada said there's a God factory in India. Prabhupada's words, not mine. That, you know, I guess you go into the factory and you come out rubber stamps. You're God. And Prabhupada said practically every week another God is coming from India. And even during the 1960s, we had God coming from Korea. Isn't it? So you have these two diametrically opposed opinions about God. You know, he's just like up there and has nothing to do with us. And once he starts everything, he just, like, that's a picture in the Sistine Chapel where he's reaching out and touches Adam, the first person, gives him the spark of life. And then another thing is just, you know, God's amongst us. But in this chapter of the Gita, we hear how Krishna is everywhere through his energies, but he's also in the spiritual world simultaneously, never leaves the spiritual world, Golokrita Vashati, Akilatma Bhuta. He's an amazing God. I mean, practically he's the most amazing, complete God you've ever heard of. He never doesn't have this chapter describes how he doesn't have a material body, and anyone who thinks he has a material body is a what? Now, what's the word Krishna uses in this chapter? Starts with an M. Mudha. What happens in India if you call someone a mudha? You end up with a fight, don't you? If you say, you're a mudha. You're a pashandi. You're a mudha. Then maybe that means you're an ass. Or even better, gokura. You're a cow or an ass. Or, anyway, you get the idea. So Krishna says, mudham, avajananti mam mudha. And Krishna is really specific about it. He calls everybody who thinks that he's part of the material world is an ass. Krishna's so specific. He doesn't mince his words. So Krishna establishes that he's pervading in this world through his energies, through the super soul in everyone's heart, but then he's also in the spiritual world enjoying like crazy simultaneously. And when he comes down to enjoy. So he's the supreme enjoyer. So that's what's called Aishwarya Jnana. That Aishwarya means opulence. The knowledge of opulence, of Krishna's opulence, of Krishna's energy. And then, as we mentioned, 11:15 talks about how people, mudhas, neglect bhakti. Intelligent people embrace it. And then 16 to 19, there's some description of the universal form, although the actual universal form is displayed to its fullest extent in chapter 11 of the Bhagavad Gita. And then 20 to 25, Krishna deals with this thing called demigod worship. He explains that demigods are all his servants, and one who worships them goes to them, but one who worships Krishna goes to Krishna. But one who worships the demigods, avidhi purvakam is the Sanskrit he uses. It's not recommended. It's not the path that he recommends. And he says, kamashtashta hrita jnana prapajante na devata. Those who are actually devoid hrita jnana of knowledge, they worship the demigods. Why? It's not, we believe in the demigods. Yes, they exist. Just like ordinary government officials exist. But if you bribe them, that's not the proper process. In America, other places, it is. You won't mention. But in America, right? I mean, if you want to have a driving license, get a driving license, you go to the examination bureau in Hillsborough here. And you say, I'd like a driving license, but, you know, I don't really want to take the test. You know, here's $100. What happens? Does anyone know what happens? Do you get your license? You get arrested. Or if the policeman stops you as you're speeding, you hand him a $50 bill, what happens? You get arrested. So in other places, if you want a driver's license, you give them some money, you get it. Right? So Krishna doesn't believe in bribery. And when you approach the demigods individually, yeah, it works sometimes. It's temporary. You may get some temporary benefit, but it's against the law. So ultimately, that's why Krishna says, Kamai Kasta Vithi Jnana Prabhajanteva Devata. Because it leads you downwards rather than upwards. And yes, you say, well, I want to go to the heavenly planets and be a demigod. Who wants to be a demigod? You get to eat mangoes as big as Hillsborough. Pretty nice. I mean, even I described to devotees Hawaii and they want to go there, right? I was just talking to one devotee's brother today, describing Hawaii. First he was thinking of going to Puerto Rico, and I said, no, Hawaii is much nicer than Puerto Rico. It's like heaven. He said, yeah, gotta go there. So what to speak of the heavenly planets? But the point is, it's all temporary there, and people are in anxiety because it's, even when you go to the heavenly planets, you have all this wealth, opulence, and everything like that. People are envious of you. The more you have, the more envious people are of you. And there's these bunch of people called asuras who are trying to always take it away from you. So you're in anxiety. And then it's temporary, then you come back. Shine punya marcha lokam vishanti. You come back to the earth planet. So, therefore, Krishna doesn't recommend demigod worship. We respect the demigods as servants of Krishna. They're all servants of Krishna. And then finally, the last part of the chapter deals with the glories of serving the Supreme Personality of God. So that's a basic summary to the ninth chapter of the Gita. Do we have time to go ahead a little bit? For a few minutes?
Because then I have 10 more minutes,
okay. Because I have a 10-minute film to show everybody again. And so, like we talked about hearing, qualifications, disqualifications, because that was the first verse, that's set in the first verse, three verses. And, of course, the first verse is, one advances by hearing, to hear properly, one must be free from envy, which I quoted that verse. And in this way, you become relieved from material miseries. Why do you become relieved from material miseries when you hear properly? Because you become transcendentally situated. The body may still get sick, the body will still get old, but you're actually absorbed in a higher dimension. Now, this is very scientific, this is very like science fiction. Not fiction, but it's true. There's a higher dimension of consciousness. And if you're absorbed in that dimension, then whatever's happening in the body is inconsequential. So you don't suffer the miseries of this world anymore. Like if you, for example, if you have $1 million and you lose $1, is it so miserable? But if you have $1 and you lose it, you lost everything. So that's like, Krishna consciousness is like having unlimited money. And then you don't worry about anything. So those are the first verse. And then a second verse talks about how this knowledge is the king of all education. I'll read the verse, actually. Usually we have the people in the audience read the verse, but since we have short time today. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, there's that vijnana again. It is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and it is joyfully performed. So Krishna consciousness is described as a system of recreation. Prabhupada was asked one time, what do you devotees of Krishna do for fun? You know, do you get like a few hours off a week or whatever? And Prabhupada said practically the whole thing is a system of recreation. It's so much fun. I mean, I'm having so much fun. Not just sitting here, but I'm having so much fun serving Krishna, getting up early in the morning. You know, people think getting up early in the morning is an ungodly hour. I was doing a program the other day and went real late, and I said, well, I gotta leave. And, you know, I get up at 3 in the morning and everyone just practically like their jaws drop down. How do you do that? I said, it's nice, because you get up and you do something, you have singing and dancing for Krishna. And it's purifying. And it's everlasting. And it's blissful. You know, and it becomes nicer and nicer every day. So that's Krishna consciousness, isn't it? Even if you're tired. So that's the second. It describes the knowledge and the practice of Krishna consciousness. And the third verse, I'm going to read this, is And then we'll end with this third verse. That the third verse is, I'll read the Sanskrit. Shradana purusha dharma shasha parantapa prapayamam nivartantem, which is samsara vartmani. And the translation is, those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me or conquer the enemies. They return to the path of birth and death in this material world. So faith, according to Krishna, means to trust implicitly that when Krishna says something, it's true and you act on it. Two things. That's Bengali. It means the definition of faith is to have implicit faith that simply doing what God says, because God knows best. Whoops. Just like there was a TV show when I was young, Father Knows Best. Do you remember that? But God knows best. Krishna knows best. Why? He's omniscient. He's omnipotent. He's all good. And we just have faith. He tells me something, and I act on it. Not blindly. Faith should never be blind. Actually, the doubt is the sign of intelligence. But faith has to be based on knowledge. So you have a right. If God comes and tells you to do something, you say, why? But then you better do it after that. So Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita did that. You know, Krishna said, you better fight. And he said, why? And basically, no in the beginning. And Krishna said, well, I'm going to convince you. Not at the point of a gun, but through logic and reasoning and a display of his opulences. Then Krishna convinced Arjuna. So these are the three ingredients that are necessary. You know, one must have this faith in Krishna. Faith, and the proof of faith is that one acts according to that faith. It's not simply belief. I know some people say, believe and you'll be saved. You ever hear that before? But the criminal believes in the government. Does that make him an honest person? He has to believe in the government or else he'll be in trouble. Because he has to know how not to get caught. So believe. You know, I believe in Krishna. Well, do you believe what Krishna says? We'll talk about that later on. So you have to believe. And the proof of belief is that if someone says something, I believe what they're speaking is for my good and the good for everybody else. And that is the definition of faith. And when you have that faith, then you can attain Krishna and understand Krishna, and you can go back to the spiritual world. So, anyway, that's all we have time for today, right? So we had our introductory lecture, a small lecture, and I wanted to show a very interesting film about our new temple project. Mr. Sachdev is back there, and he's heading up our temple project, right? And across the street, they're clearing the land, very slowly because there's been a lot of rain and other impediments and cold weather and everything like that. So the land is being cleared. The next step is to put in the foundation stone. And this is a very interesting video that we put together this week using some other temples' clips to present the project. Okay? And someone needs to put on the audio for the film so people can hear it. You know how to do that? Put on the audio for the computer. It says computer sound in. Okay. Let's open with BLC. Is it on? Okay. Well, the video is one thing. I want to make sure the... excuse me for a second, just want to make sure.
Facility, which we've been using for approximately 30 years, and do not facilitate our congregation, to spread Christian consciousness, help with the second generation. We are building this new facility for Shishi Radha Lokananda. As you see, the construction is going on at this very moment.
The rest of it is more is better. I know you don't like to see bulldozers and backhoes and stuff like that.
This wonderful new temple in Shishi Radha Lokananda. This is the first green temple in the United States, perhaps in the whole world. We're going to be generating our own electricity. We're going to be recirculating the water, and we're going to be up to the platinum standard of the U.S. Green Building Council. Through this very temple will be an attractive place for people to come, even if they're not immediately interested in Christian consciousness. After some time, they will be, just by seeing this magnificent structure and taking darshan with the Shishi Radha Lokananda.
Misunderstandings, but after coming to temple, hearing, joining the Bhagavad Gita study group and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam lectures and classes in temple really helped more.
Because we start thinking of God more, everything is taken care of. It's like watering the root of the tree.
First, our attitude was different. Me first attitude was here. But now the focus is on looking towards my faults, not at the other husband's fault or any other's fault. The change that I feel is, I am more calm. The same thing that is noticed in my husband.
Very positive, very calm, very peaceful, happier than before, stress-free.
At Sunday school, we try to inculcate positive consciousness upon children.
Sunday school has helped me in my life because it taught me many values that can be applied to my life. For example, it taught me compassion to all living things.
Not all the pictures are there. Different places.
With the foundation of this Vedic education, the kids will be able to face the peer pressure and bad habits.
Sunday school can be engaged because it taught me a lot of how to face people with different attitudes and characteristics.
It has helped me understand most of the moral values that we should inculcate and imply into our lives, such as behaving to our elders and respecting others.
We learn spiritual education by way of scientific explanations and not just blind ritualistic faith.
Eight years ago, I first attended my first Kirtan program. It had a tremendous impact on my life. When I started attending the Kirtan on a weekly basis, it gave me inner happiness, joy. It feels me connect to the divine and also feel the love which I want to share with everyone.
Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the epitome of purity. And when we try to get in touch with his deity form, doing his deity worship and singing his kirtan and associating with, once we attain this purity, we can share it with the society.
So anyone who wants to help contribute to this new temple in any way, we have need Lakshmi's blessings in order to construct the temple. But Krishna has sent money so far, so we're continuing. Okay, so thank you very much. So there's an announcement from our sponsor. What's it?
So today we have two special guests. They are from all the way from Houston. Advaita Chan Prabhu, please come in. Congregation here. They have a successful program in Houston, holding the Bhakti Diksha program and also your university program and several other programs. So they have a seminar for the last 2 days at the house of Advaita Govinda Prabhu and Kirtita Sundari Mataji. I'd like to thank them for hosting the program. So we all that.